Hey, I'm thinking back over the last, say, 12 years as far as the SEC. You know, during that stretch starting in, 2006, if you want to go back a couple of years even before that, you had LSU winning a national title. But then you had either LSU or Florida, winning national titles. And then LSU passed the baton, and then it was Alabama and Florida going back and forth. And then you had Auburn as a surprise team in 2010. Then it was back to Alabama with Georgia, one play away. It could have been Georgia playing Notre Dame for the national title in 2012. The point I'm getting at, we kind of on paper going into the season, if we're thinking about a national champ from the SEC, it's Alabama and Georgia. If everything falls in place, I was throwing this out in the 4 o'clock hour, Doug, that there's probably a handful of plays. We always talk about the difference between a great team and a national championship team, handful of plays, right? Well, the same thing can be said for teams that are mediocre or below average. A handful of plays can make them average, and then you keep, going up one step from there. If things fall in place right for another team in the SEC, who could be that team in 2019 that's not named Alabama and Georgia?
I kind of think LSU has the momentum. They've got a veteran quarterback, pretty good up front. To me, they're the kind of team that can challenge. The problem is that their biggest game is Alabama's in Tuscaloosa, and they've not fared well in the games in Tuscaloosa. They have, played Alabama to the final minute in Baton Rouge, but not as much success on the road. But I just think they're kind of built for a really good run this year. So that's kind of my pick. Now, there is some buzz about Auburn. If you look at the offensive and defensive lines and really, a team that's going to emerge has to be really strong on both sides. Auburn's loaded. The offensive line was so bad last year but got measurably better as the season went on. Now everybody's experienced. Defensive line's as good as any in the country. But now you've got skill players. They're going to have to settle on a quarterback, but you've got two talented potentials there. You've got running backs. You've got probably the best wide receiver depth that they've had in a while. So that is another team. It's just their schedule, to me, may just be too much to overcome.
It's interesting. I go back to my conversation with Gus Malzahn last year during SEC Media Days, last year held in Atlanta. And surprisingly, because a lot of coaches keep it close to the vest on how they feel about their team, their program. They say nice things, to build optimism. But as far as, really throwing out the compliments, they usually keep it close and then have everybody be really happy with the end result. Not Gus Malzahn. He was talking about with me that he's looking forward to this next period over the next 5 years. We could be talking about the best period of college football in Auburn history. That didn't play out last year that way. So with that said, the fact that you threw Auburn out for 2019, maybe it goes back to the feelings and the optimism that Gus Malzahn feels for his program.
Well, Gus is definitely glass half full guy. In fact, he's a guy that leaves glass is always three quarters full. But I think that's kind of what gets him in trouble. The expectations get raised and neither he nor his staff do anything really kind of to tamp them down. The fans get carried away and then they're kind of let up for expectation. If you look at his past, they seem to come out of nowhere when they're really good. And that's why I think there are a lot of Auburn fans that just wish he'd kind of keep his mouth shut, That's it. I think he does his best work, though, when his back's against the wall and his contract's not going to be renewed or he's going to get fired or the season's about to go awry. That seems to be when he does his best coaching and when Auburn responds its best. And that's what's impressed me the most over the years. It's not when they've been good, but when they've been teetering on the brink and how he kind of rallies everybody around. I think that's probably the most unsung thing about him as a coach.
Here's the thing. I was talking about this with Adam Sparks with the Tennessean last hour about, big concern about Vanderbilt. You've got that talent with Keyshawn Vaughn back in the backfield. My question is, knowing that you have to make sure, especially in the regular season, that he is, you know, healthy. I mean, because you're going to accumulate a lot of bumps and bruises over the course of a long season in the SEC. So to make sure you're not overutilized. But that is, you know, certainly the big concern if you're a fan of the Auburn Tigers, depending on who we're talking about being the bell cow back in that backfield, of running that person into the ground and overutilizing them. So whether it's
Well, and I think the problem there in depth, as much as Gus kind of locks in maybe week three, week four on one guy that kind of overuses them, I think they do have the depth this year. I think they also have some I'm not going to say better options than Jarrett Stidham because he's headed to the NFL. Very good quarterback. But I think they've got options that might fit what Gus wants to do offensively a little better.
Yeah, but when we talk about better options, is it more consistency, too, that we're looking for at that position? Because, look, if you were getting Stidham, the version we saw against Purdue, and you got that version of Stidham his entire career at Auburn, then we're talking about a whole new ballgame.
Right, right. And obviously it wasn't there last year. And, again, you know, I thought what they did with their offensive line of the season went on was pretty remarkable because they were horrible. They were horrible the first half of the season and still had a chance to win some big games. You know, but Stidham just it just didn't go well for Auburn, and Jarrett Stidham didn't have time. Now you're going to have two quarterbacks who are a little more mobile and can really – I think Gus calling the plays can kind of call – more what, you know, he's comfortable with. And that's using the quarterback on the run more and using, you know, kind of the RPO just more effectively because you've got more of a threat that the quarterback will run it. And I think that takes some of the impact off the running backs. But still, you know, you've got Cam Martin, you've got Booby Whitlow, you got a couple of freshmen coming in. I mean, they're actually pretty good. And you've got Eli Stove, who should be healthy. Just kind of, you know, he's listed as wide receiver, but he's kind of a scat back. They use him reverses and stuff. So, I think the potential there is for the running game to be pretty good and the passing game to be more inadequate.
Well, who's going to be the ones, though, catching the ball? I mean, you got talent, but you don't really have a lot of experience as far as the wide receiver corps. So certainly when you think about experience on offense as far as weapons are concerned, it starts with the backfield. But, you know, the big question is, first of all, you're going to have a new first-year starter taking over the offense as far as at quarterback, but you're also talking about some new roles as far as wide receivers as well.
Well, you start with Seth Williams, who just had a breakout year as a freshman. You've got Stove back there. I just think the depth is better. You know, they actually had some guys play as true freshmen, which is a rarity at that position, who kind of came through. You know, Sal Cannell is a senior now, and he was kind of a possession guy that had a great start in the season, particularly in the Washington game, kind of disappeared and then worked his way back into the rotation. So I think the difference is you're going to see some guys with some who are real deep threats now. And that's something they really haven't had the last few years.
You also
Anthony Schwartz is a guy that, you know, may the Schwartz be with you. You know, he has world-class speed on the edge. Again, I think those are two, three, four options that are better than anything they've had the last 3 years.
And look, they're nice options, but it's different when you're not the main option last year and being able to come in and surprise some folks. But now the fact that this year you're expecting to be the guys, meaning Williams and Schwartz, and things change from that standpoint. I mean, it's a lot easier when the expectations are not there going into a season. It's just like we look at the offensive line. I mean, the best part, you know, when I start breaking down to see – the projections on how good a team can be as far as in college football in an upcoming season, I start looking to see as far as the front seven, as far as on defense, who's going to be on the defensive line, the depth there. But from an offensive standpoint, it also starts with who's up front as far as the offensive line. So the good news, if you're a fan of Auburn, is the fact five starters back. We're talking about senior leadership with that offensive line. Unfortunately, for every good game, like, say, against Purdue, you also had a lot of that inconsistency where they didn't work well together.
No, but I think the second half of the season they were vastly improved. I actually thought they had one of their better games against Alabama. And then, obviously, they just steamrolled Purdue. I think the difference is going in last year, I had Auburn friends tell me that basically Auburn had six offensive linemen, period, that they could count on. And now you're looking not only the starting five back, but they feel like they're too deep. And again, in a rugged 12-game SEC season, depth's a big factor. And I think they've also got the depth now. And that's huge. And just listen to people who are in the know, like Cole Kubelik, they were coached up last year. And fundamentally, they're more sound. And I think that makes a difference. They had a tough learning curve, but I think they came out ahead.
Yeah, and plus you go back to, and it is great for Tennessee, for example, under first-year head coach Jeremy Pruitt last season with the huge wins going on the road to beat Auburn down in the Plains and also getting a win later against Kentucky. But from an Auburn perspective, I mean, right there in the in October, looking so bad on the road against Mississippi State and then losing the very next week to Tennessee at home like they did, I mean, that's a difference of being what they were 8-5 compared to having a double-digit win season last season.
Yeah, it is the inconsistency. I think that's what frustrates people is that when the expectations are high, you know, Auburn will look like a world beater one week, and the next week you don't know what team showed up. And I think that's something they've got to overcome. You know, you go back to the opener. You know, the Washington win kind of got downplayed, but you're basically talking about the Pac-12 champ, and they were in command most of that game. It got close to the end. They pulled it out. So this is a team that has some very big victories, but some very head-scratching performances, and I think that's the biggest frustration with this Auburn program right now.
Having a chance to visit with Doug Segrist down in Birmingham. Tennessee, you know, once again, second-year head coach in Jeremy Pruitt. You know, it's one thing to have a blip on the radar and have a subpar season, say, you know, 5-7 last year. But when you talk about the fact that this has been lingering, the underachieving football program over in Knoxville, as a fan of the SEC and as a fan of the rich tradition of the SEC, there's just certain programs that you don't expect to be down. I mean, yeah, Alabama went from 92 to 2009 as far as winning national championships. But in between, they still had some really good seasons, right? When I look at Tennessee and the fact that back-to-back, you know, 4 wins in 2017, 5 wins last year, I just never thought we'd ever see a day where, you know, that's acceptable, you know, and the fact that, you know, to me, a bad year, off year for Tennessee, and like certain programs out there across the land, not just in the SEC, a bad year for Tennessee, 8-4. You know, the fact that you're talking 4-8 and 5-7, you know, in back-to-back years, that to me is not what Tennessee is all about, in my opinion.
I agree, but I think it's going to be another year before you really see them turn the corner. I think they'll be a better team this year, but the schedule, again, it's not so much who you play, but when you play them. And that stretch where they've got road trip to Florida, Georgia at home, Mississippi State home, road trip to Alabama, and then let's head on to South Carolina next. Oh, and by the way, UAB, which may be one of the top mid-majors in the country, comes into town. I mean, that's just brutal, and that would be brutal for anybody in the SEC not named Alabama or Georgia. And I think that's kind of the uphill climb that Jeremy Pruitt faces. And they just don't have the depth yet. I think it's going to be another recruiting class or two for them really to get back to where they once were. But I think you can see the improvement. This was a more fundamentally sound team last year, and that's where it all starts. That's what you hire the coach for. You know, you've got all these different phases. You've got recruiting, you've got coaching, you've got development, and I think you're seeing the development already start to kick in. Now the rest has to.
See, I think we're talking about Tennessee. I'm going to throw it out there. Going into the Vanderbilt game on November 30th, I think Tennessee will be 7-4 through the first 11 games. Could be even 8-3, but let's just be say, all right, 7-4. I think they have a chance to go 8-4 if they can beat Vanderbilt the final game of the season as far as the regular season is concerned.
If they go 8-4, then in my mind right now, Jeremy Pruitt's SEC Coach of the Year. Again, because of that stretch from mid-September, you know, 3 weeks in September on, is just so brutal.
See, I think they can get one of those.
That gauntlet.
See, I think they can get one of those, you know, at Florida, home against Georgia, Mississippi State, and then Alabama. My guess is they can probably pull off the Mississippi State. So I think they go 1-3 in that four-game stretch there. If they do that, then a 7-4 or even 8-3 for the first 11 is a possibility going into that final game, because then they'll go into the month of November with some momentum. They get South Carolina. I like Jake Bentley a lot. I like Jake Bentley last year to pull off the upset against Georgia instead of throwing the pick six in the very first drive, so forget about that. But, you know, I think that Tennessee, 4-4, 5-3 going into the final four games in November.
Here's the problem. We've always, you know, said if Tennessee excuse me, can just get to November, the schedule takes care of everything. Because, but you know, over the years, Tennessee's November schedule has been as easy as it gets. But you can't say that anymore, because now you're going to have to go to Kentucky. And we saw what Kentucky did last year. And there are people who believe that this Kentucky team may be better than last year. Now, I'm not buying that.
I am certainly not buying that.
Well, not without Snell and Allen, but there are people who follow football who think this is this team that's kind of built for another run. But then you got to go to Missouri, and then, of course, look at what Vanderbilt's done the last 4 years, 5 years against Tennessee. So even the November schedule that Tennessee fans used to count on, you know, it's kind of a hall of mirrors now. It's scary.
Hey, by the way, South Carolina, that's one of those teams that could end the year in the top half of the SEC East or the bottom half. You know, where do you feel like? Because you look over the last 5 years, but the last 2 years, 7 wins last season. I thought they left some wins out on the football field, you know, especially coming after a 9-3 season, or excuse me, 9-win season in 2017. So, but 7 wins, I just thought that they – you know, should have had more last season. They didn't do it. Where are your expectations, say, for South Carolina, and especially how they fit in with regards to the SEC East?
You know, I read recently that someone has, you know, a number of people have circled the Alabama trip to South Carolina is the game, you know, the trap game Alabama has to be careful about. I don't buy it. I know in 2010, South Carolina's Stephen Garcia played out of his mind, and they won that game. But that was it was almost a decade ago. I still think they're kind of in the same ballpark, 6-6, 7-5. They will be good, you know. But I don't think they'll be that big a threat. But again, it's when you know Tennessee's going to have to go there, or I guess that game's in Knoxville. Tennessee's going to host them after that gauntlet. And, you know, by the way, I mean, South Carolina's got a similar gauntlet. I mean, they'll be coming off back-to-back games with Georgia and Florida. So, you know, that it could go either way. But I think it's kind of one of those games right now. It would be hard to proclaim a winner. It looks like a toss-up for both teams.
I mean, South Carolina's schedule, by the way, is what I wish every Power 5 conference team in the country had a schedule like this. They have 8 conference games. Their 2 of their 4 non-conference matchups are against teams from a Power 5 conference. They begin the year against North Carolina. They end the season at home against Clemson. But what is the big killer for South Carolina besides the teams in the SEC East? The two teams that they play in the SEC West, you mentioned Alabama in the third week of the season. At least they get them at home. But the other team on this list, they have to go to Texas A&M on November 16th.
Right.
So two of the top 4 teams in the West, South Carolina has to take them on as well.
Well, and as long as we're giving them props for their schedule, I mean, their FCS game, second week in the season, they missed the memo there that you're supposed to play it before your rival game. But, you know, they've got a perennial playoff team in Charleston Southern. But then the App State game.
That's not going to be easy.
I know. It's between Vanderbilt and A&M. So, again, you talk about a trap game. So, if they go 6-6 with this schedule, you know, they're going to be wolves out. But that may be the best you could possibly hope for.
They could finish the season on a 7- or 8-game losing streak. Because starting with Kentucky, I feel like they can get Kentucky at home. But then they go at Georgia. They host Florida, at Tennessee, They host Vanderbilt, but their month in November, hosting Vanderbilt, then Appalachian State, which is not going to be easy at all. In fact, it was Penn State that took Appalachian State to overtime last year to pull that win off. And then they finish out at Texas A&M and then hosting Clemson. I mean, South Carolina could really go seven straight losses to end the year.
And still be a pretty good team.
Yeah, I mean, still pretty good. Just unfortunately, the schedule didn't play out well for them.
No, it's the worst schedule in the country. So there's no doubt about that. And you know, you hope that's kind of taken into account, but it's a rugged road ahead. Now, they may surprise everybody. You know, half the teams on the schedule look so daunting now may go south, but I just don't think Florida's going south. I don't think Georgia. I don't think Alabama. I certainly don't think Clemson are going south.
Can I just say that next week, I hope that when we get the results of the voting by the members of the media, I hope that they all of a sudden we don't see Vanderbilt pick last in the SEC East again. You know, I think
you will, but that's just
called being lazy.
I wonder if anybody pays attention.
Yeah, I think that's just called being lazy. As far as doing, I mean, here's the thing. No offense to Tennessee, but you know the fact that Tennessee has lost three straight to Vanderbilt. You got to win one. I think just based on the last 3 years, Vanderbilt has earned the right not to be picked last in the SEC East.
Agree, but here's the problem. Let's look at their first three games. You know, Georgia at Purdue, LSU.
Right.
You know, I mean, if they somehow come out 1-2, that's a major step forward.
Right.
You know, we remember the Purdue team that didn't perform very well against Auburn, but they also beat Ohio State. Missouri's had trouble playing up there. I mean, that's a tough non-conference game. I understand the academic lure. I think I would stick to Wake Forest.
But here's the thing. If they start off 1-2, you go, there's Vanderbilt, 1-2.
Right.
If they don't allow any of those two losses, because I think it will be 1-2, to be honest with you. But as long as they don't allow that to impact them in week four and moving forward, I think all of a sudden then this team can get on a roll. I think they can beat Northern Illinois. I think they can go to Oxford and beat Ole Miss. They can beat UNLV. They can beat Missouri at home. They can go to South Carolina and beat the Gamecocks there. So with that said, if they can just not allow a loss to turn into another loss, I think we're talking about the possibilities there, looking at this schedule for Vanderbilt can rip off five straight wins right there in the middle of their schedule.
And they're just talking about a really good bowl, not just a third-tier bowl, but you're looking at a good way to spend the holidays.
Yeah,
and
because
again, that would be the accomplishment. You know, you and I have been talking about this for 20 years. I mean, what is the high water mark for Vanderbilt? I think they hit a few years ago with 9 wins, but that's hard to tame. And you know, I think the fact they've been so competitive. I don't think the schedule necessarily plays in their favor, but if they can pull through this, it could be a very memorable season.
If they do that, then you're talking about a 6-2 record, 4 games to go. You know, you're talking about they host East Tennessee State, one of those Final Four, so that's your seventh win. Can they get one more win in that combination of at Florida, home against Kentucky, and at Tennessee? Absolutely. 8-4 is not out of the realm of possibility for this Commodores team.